It's easy to get lost. This is The Revenue Maze, and I'm Valerie Cobb. Join me as we navigate the halls, dead ends, and U-turns on your path towards upward growth trajectory. The Revenue Maze is sponsored by Revenue North Star, guidance and execution through fractional revenue leadership, uncovering hidden revenues, and empowering small business growth through process-driven sales customized to your company environment. All right. Welcome, everybody. This is, this is a great day, and I'm super excited about my guest today. And this is going to be a great episode. He's going to help us get out of the revenue maze. So many great things. He's an author of Idea Stormers, 21 Days to a Big Idea. He's also a Board of Advisors Global Innovation Institute. Yes, I said the word innovation. This is going to be fun. And he's a senior fellow of the conference board. And this is what I think is, I love this title, but he's innovation and marketing instructor at Caltech, but wait for it, and contributor to Caltech's curious and quirky monthly podcast, where they believe that curious leaders change the world. This is so much fun. And right now, he is also co-founder and chief idea guy at Growth Innovation Engine. Whoops, I screwed it up. And he'll tease me about this. At Growth Engine Innovation Agency. Welcome, Brian Matamor.
Hey, Valerie. Well, thank you for having me. It's good seeing you again, even if it's only virtually.
Yes. I mean, I've had the privilege of actually being, sitting at the seat of the master of ideation. And maybe that's your new title.
Well, you know, am I turning red on camera? I think I might be, but thank you for that. I have spent my whole life trying to understand ideation process, but we're still working on the mastership thing.
Okay. I love it. Love it. Well, as this show format goes, you know, we want to help people get through those bumps and bruises and not hit up against the wall of the revenue maze. And so what's one thing you can kind of share with them today that will help them get out of the revenue maze?
Well, so let's define our terms first, you know, and this is what ideation, well, consultants do this all the time, but, you know, right? But let's define our terms. So when we say revenue maze, is that a bad thing or a challenging thing or a good thing? Tell me how you think of the revenue maze.
Well, we did it broad on purpose, right? Because it can be any sort of form, but usually when you picture somebody in a maze and they're trying to get out of the maze quickly, the listeners and viewers, a lot of them are startups or small business trying to sell into enterprise or create product going. So we think of top line revenue because 82% of businesses that do fail due to cash flow attributed to revenue teams dysfunction. And so sometimes what happens is, okay, if 82% revenue teams dysfunction, that covers your sales, marketing, service, product, and you land in a lot of the product space and the ideation, of course, marketing space as well, but and fixing that so they don't keep bumping. They get out faster. They get to revenue quicker.
Yeah. And so with that broad definition, I mean, that is sort of aligns with something that I've been trying to popularize, maybe a little unsuccessfully for the past 20 years, is the notion of a total innovation enterprise. And the notion here is that it's not just for new products or new ad campaigns, but that you can use the ideation processes and innovation manifestations in every facet of the business, in every department, every person, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's the exciting part of my work, is to know which techniques might have the greatest chance of succeeding or getting you out of that maze for different kinds of challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. And I I have to add a little caveat because we know each other and I've actually had the privilege of actually hiring you to come and kind of do that for one of the challenges that I had at a former company. And it's that entire ideation process. Fundamentally, we're all running into, like, I'm being hired to do high involvement planning sessions for 2024 coming up, you know, and moving through the strategy and the forecasts and all of those things and being able to meet the forecasts and just all of the holistic approach to the company getting where they want to be, right? We talk about Alice in Wonderland all the time and Cheshire Cat, and she's asking, where do I go? And he goes, well, what do you want to do? You know, and you're the master at kind of pulling out the right questions for getting at whatever the root, if it's departmental, if it's a sales block, if it's a customer block, if it's an operations block. And so I can see, because you're a forerunner in that space, it has taken 20 years for people kind of to come around to that idea, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because my work sort of integrates, if you will, worlds that were typically seen as analytical, right? And so you look at strategy, and in the past, that was always seen as primarily an analytical exercise. You look in the rearview mirror, you look at the competition, you do all the, you know, the good, you know, sort of analytical work that's important. But in our work, that's step one. Step two then is coming up with all the ideas that could inform that strategy. And so that then your growth plans, you know, go from one to X to 10X, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big challenges of doing strategy work. Number one. Number two, you know, we just did some strategy work for TCU, the Neely Business School, their 5-year plan. And the other thing is we involved in the planning process. And it became, you know, the students, the professors, the dean, you know, the advisory committees, the board, everybody was involved in that process. And of course, it was an amazing experience. It actually just recently won an award, and they actually published this thing on their website, on the Neely Business School website, because it was such an interactive and dynamic and wonderful process, number one. But number two, in terms of commitment, first of all, you get better ideas doing that, as you well know. Yeah. But secondly, in terms of the commitment then for actually doing, you know, implementing the strategy, which was what it's all about, you've already got in your built-in evangelists, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about that, in our definition of high involvement planning, it's top down, bottom up, middle, sideways, customers, you name it. And I love that you mentioned working on their 5-year plan, because then how do you execute without all those players coming up with ideas? And also having that buy-in is huge. And I think that's, you're right. You've got built-in evangelists, right? There is no, you know, a company thrives when everybody is touting the company's name. You know, it gets the word out. For sure.
Yeah, of course, strategy, to your point of having so many people and so many ideas, I mean, strategy is as much about, as we know, what you're not going to do is what you're going to do. And yes. So you use the folks who are involved not only to get the ideas, but to prioritize those ideas. And of course, you want to start with some major buckets, you know, and then there are ideas within those buckets, number one. And number two, you want to have somebody that's responsible within the organization for that particular bucket or platform or major initiative.
I don't know why more don't think of it in that light. You know, it makes a CEO's job effortless if they all come up with what they're, you know, what to do and what not to do, and they buy in on what not to do. It helps break down silos. It helps steer the ship. There's an analogy and excuse me, because I don't know rowing industry well, but I think it's swell. I don't know, when they get in such concert, They're yes. not all working through their different agendas. And so the boat's not going in circles or nowhere. It's functioning so well after some point in time, right? Down the road, whatever that is, functioning so well. And I think it's Atomic Habits. I think that's the book I read that had, that talks about the British, was it the British rowing team? Or was it the cycling team? Anyways, I'm getting two analogies mixed up, but it doesn't really matter. It really is moving it in the one direction, right? And swell means that they are going in such concert in that rowing kind of apparatus. And they're all invested and they're all buying in and hyper-focused on that target. I love that. And you've showed me that. You do that well.
Well, thank you. You know, you're making me think of a session I did. It was for a company called Power Options. It's a consortium of nonprofits based in Boston. And so they buy energy and discount it for nonprofits. The CEO, a woman, was an ex-Marine, captain, I think, or major or something, you know, really high up. Anyway, for our team building thing, we did several days, but for our team building thing, we actually went out on the Charles River and rowed together, the board.
Fun.
And, you know, I was in the back, hopefully not catching a crab, as they say, but it was a wonderful experience in a way. It was a metaphor and an analog of what we were trying to do together. And it was a great thing, you know, it was wonderful. So as hokey as those things may sound, they're actually very powerful.
Yeah. 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 And I think sometimes, especially now you've done this for a lot of very large organizations, but you've also gone and compacted it down to some small organizations, and the trade-off for a lot of times when I run into small organizations, it's the, oh my gosh, well, we're wearing 500 hats. How can we do this? How can we make this happen? What's the return on investment? Why are we doing this and not just putting out fires today? And in fact, you run into that a ton in the small organization. I got to put my fire out today. Yeah. And getting them to even ideate on how to not put out their fire today and think about the future. Tell us some of those organizations, how you've kind of corralled them a little bit.
Well, you know, I mean, the Fortune 500 list is, you know, we've worked with, you know, a third of the Fortune 500s and, you know, all the top names we've worked for. But, you know, as you were talking there, you know, number one is that, you know, people think of ideation as something, oh, it's got to be a whole day thing, you know, and or 2 days. And the point, I think, of part of my work, and it's the reason I wrote some of my books, you know, Idea Stormers and 21 Days to a Big Idea. The notion was that smaller companies who don't have the Unilevers or Procter & Gamble's or BNY Mellon sort of budgets could use this stuff by themselves. And this is, I don't tell anyone, Valerie, but this stuff is not rocket science. Don't tell anyone. It's not rocket science. You know, you can use a proper me definition technique or a wishing technique or worst idea technique or an idea, you know, whatever. You can use these techniques and you can do it over lunch, you know, and also you don't even have to use it for big challenges. You can use it to help you figure out how to put out the fire quicker, better, faster, right? And yep. and what I found is when companies start using these techniques, they're more likely to use these techniques, you know, because they work, right?
They work.
And so, you know, so you can start by putting out fires with this stuff. And that makes it, you know, it makes life a lot better. You don't get burned. Let's put it that way.
It certainly does. I've used some of Brian's techniques and then some that it's just, I call it's the yes and exercise. So if anybody has ever managed a I would say nicely, an argumentative sales team against marketing, against product, against operations not delivering. If you ever have been in that environment where everybody's going around in circles and everything, the yes and gets them to align really quick. And it is great. You probably call it something else. I just call it yes and, because it is, you say yes, and I love that idea, and blah, 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 you know, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I have actually started a lot of high involvement planning sessions with the yes and exercise, just to get the teams to start talking to each other. Nothing else, but just to start talking, you know.
Absolutely. So powerful. You know, obviously that comes from improv. The yes and is the most famous improv technique, and it's very powerful. I mean, the simplest technique I know of is the and technique, where you just mash up two different things to get an idea. But you're absolutely right. When you can get the different parties involved and get them ideating together, it's so extraordinary, because number one, you get better ideas. But number two, everybody owns the ideas then. And so you don't have this back and forth fighting thing going on. And people commit to each other and they say, oh, that person's not that bad after all. And it just, you know, it's, I almost hate to say, but it's sort of a, it's almost a spiritual experience where people come together if you do it well. And they communicate in such profound ways. And it sort of keeps me doing the work, because it's so exciting to see when those, you know, those things get resolved in such a positive way. And ideas will do that. New ideas have, they can be miracles. I hate to say it that way, but they can.
They can. They can infuse life back into a company in turnarounds. And that's kind of been my sweet spot, has been turnarounds, right? And a lot of what's happening is they've gone completely stale, almost like, I love the fact that you said it's almost a spiritual experience. You don't have to be religious to understand connection.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely. When you connect, it's so funny. When I've gone through clinical trials, if you're talking healthcare, or customer trials, there's nothing better than bringing in a team of, you know, customers, potential customers and customers, and doing ideation with those guys, because the customers then connect with the employees of the company and they start to understand the needs that are running in that place, but in a way that is not a salesy way, not any kind of way. The customers are telling you. And if you would listen to the customers, I mean, we always say, why do people buy? And I threw this on LinkedIn and you'll laugh at me, but the answer, no one ever gets it. And I laughed because it came from my mentor in sales. And he probably doesn't even know he's a mentor, but he came one time to a sales team. And he threw that zinger out there at everybody. He said, okay, guys, why do people buy? And they came up and they said, emotion. They have a need. They listed all these things. And he said, you're wrong. They buy for their reason. That is it.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, they buy for their reason. And then, yes, it may have roots in emotion, it may have roots in all these things, but the ideation process helps bring out the reasons for existence, right?
And Valerie, when you're talking, we have a program called Trade Link, LINK, where we actually do joint ideation between a retailer, for instance, you know, whether we've done this with Walmart and CVS and Kroger, etc. And we'd have the brand team in there ideating with the Kroger buyer, whatever. Well, you can't get these guys for more than 15 minutes typically. And we'd have these guys in there and gals, you know, for 2 or 3 hours ideating together. And there was one example with one client where the buyer, and then after that experience, she would call up the client like every week and say, how's my new product coming? When are you going to get that to me? You know? And it's again, that process of bringing people together to ideate together that can be magic.
You know, it can. I know in some new product development cycles, like Volvo, it takes 5 years to come out with a product. With ideation, even if you have to have, and I'm not talking about FDA approval and all of those things, right? Because that could take a long time if you're in healthcare. But even if we cut the time in half of Volvo due to the ideation process, you know, and coming up with things that were already, they were coming up with the go-to-market for you. Literally coming up with it. Oh, you could, you know, I remember in the session that you did with us, oh, well, you could use this at, and they were the customers were evangelizing. Hey, here's how many people I could see talking about this. Here's how many, you know, and it was just like, and it was magical.
Well, and you know, you made me think of another example. It was actually with Unilever and like one of their main agency, but I've also done this with a client in like five of their agencies at once. And it was a new product launch. And normally, you know, the process is the creatives would go, you know, they get a brief, then they come up with ideas, then they bring it back. The client would say, no, that's not quite right. You got to change this here. And you know, that'll take months, as you know. Well, we did the one day session and we went from zero to, okay, we're ready to launch. Because we got the big idea, we got the campaign, we'll do a little research, but we're kind of ready to go. And you know, what was surprising to me is that the agency was actually relieved, you know, because we had solved it without all the back and forth and the rejection, and everybody could move forward together.
So let's unpack that a little bit. We just said that you can barely get 5 minutes. Maybe 5 minutes with a Fortune 50, 100, maybe not even that, maybe 1 minute, right?
Yep.
And then you're trying to get your customers to go back and forth with you. So in the sales process, anytime you lose control of that sales process, you go into radio silence, right? Yeah. And radio silence is the kiss of death. That's why you have the next steps. You get it on the calendar because then you're chasing, especially in enterprise, you're chasing the gatekeeper to get you an appointment 20 million times. So you could have a sales cycle that runs to 7 years, right? and it's the stupidest thing. So it's kind of like if anybody has not done product dev or any of those or a sales process, going into that black hole of the calendar that these C-level people have is miserable, and it is the time sink, right? You could probably go to market in a couple of days if you weren't chasing people around, right?
Well, you know, the other thing, yes, and Valerie, the thing that I did not mention, you know, why would the Walmart or Kroger buyer or CVS buyer or Home Depot, we've done them with all these guys, why would they have the meeting initially? Well, it's because we would do research on their behalf. And so, for instance, we would research with Kroger shoppers what they liked about the fish department, what they didn't like, and what they can improve. And then we'd have those videotaped, and we would create a highlight reel of everything we had learned, and that would be the basis for the ideation. And so if you're the Kroger buyer, what, you don't want to see this research that was paid for, at, you know, this 10-minute highlight reel of what they think of how you're doing? No, they absolutely want to see that. And by the way, the research now, there are certain services like 1Q, others, we don't, you know, I'm not on their payroll or anything, but we've used different services where you can get research done literally in, you know, 15 minutes because people will respond on their smartphones, and you can have 200 people tell you what they thought about a product or an idea or a company or a retailer or whatever. And you can go into that meeting and say, oh, I just polled 200 of your shoppers here at Whole Foods because you can geolocate it. I just polled those 200 shoppers about this offering in this department, and this is what they said. Should we get together and talk about it? I mean, come on. And maybe it costs you $500, you know, or $1,000 to do this research. So. Yeah. You know, the world of technology, if you're creative, has made it, I don't know if it's easier, but if you can be creative about the sales process, not just the traditional approaches, and bring value. The way to think of it is to bring value every time you want to meet with them, you'll be off and running.
You know, the concept is not new. I think you're unpacking it in a way that's digestible to the listeners, because the outcry is genuine and authentic. So when you go in and you've shown that you've done your research and that you're genuinely interested in their company, what they're doing, versus, we always say this with feature benefit vomit. Hey, you know, and if I say Simon Sinek and he says, well, you know, the why to the how to the what, versus we say what to the how to the why, right? That's what the genuine thing is. Look at me. I'm so amazing. So you would want to buy with me, right? And now we'll move there, instead of saying it isn't about you. It isn't about that. And being creative is all about curiosity. And that's, I guess, why I would say I loved your, you know, where curious leaders change the world. I thought that was great, because the reality is so many, they get in the humdrum day in, day out, and they forget to be human with it, forget to be curious with it.
You know, as you're talking about, I'm thinking about the listener, and they're saying, okay, great, I should go in with ideas. How do I get some ideas?
Exactly.
Right? So what I'm thinking is, you know, they could go with, I have a TEDx talk I did. If they search my name, Brian Matamore, and the topic, Solving Impossible Challenges. In there, I talk about doing work with Catholic Knights Life Insurance. It's a company that only sells life insurance to Catholics, of all things. I mean, you think selling life insurance is hard. So try selling it only to Catholics. But anyway, it goes through a technique in there called the problem redefinition technique. And it allows you literally, I'm not kidding, to come up with 10,000 different ways to define your challenge by, you know, redefining the subject, verb, and object. So how do we sell more life insurance to Catholics? So come up with alternatives for we, come up with alternatives for sell, and come up with alternatives for Catholics. And, you know, if you get 10 in each column, that's 1,000 different ways. You do a mix and match, a word combo, if I'm explaining this well. You know, so how do we get the Pope to incentivize Hispanic Catholics to buy our service or whatever? You can see what I'm doing here, right?
Yeah.
But that's incredibly powerful. And then if you're a team leader, you can take some of those combined sentences and use those to trigger your team. And so, team, I would like you to come up with how we get, you know, the admins here to give away our life insurance to, you know, Catholic grandparents, and come to me with some ideas about that. And so I don't know. I didn't want to leave this without giving the listener something that they could go do.
Absolutely. And
it's extraordinarily successful. The company that did that, they improved their sales by 52% just using that one technique. Yeah.
Wow. Well, on top of spiritual and improving 52%, I think that we've rewritten the golden rule, right? I mean, it's one of those things. I won't say we did. That's more of my inside joke. Absolutely. The whole point of this show is to give tips on how to get them out of the revenue maze and to do it in a way that they feel that they can take that back. Many of us go in and we say, here's three bullets. This is what you can do. But Brian does have some of these techniques in his book that you can unpack. Just pick one. Just go home today and pick one of the techniques and try it out, you know, amongst your teams.
Yeah. And the one, you know, I do work with the city of New York and the state of New York, the comptroller's office, to get these folks to be more creative. I mean, you know, I think I'm giving ultimate examples here, right? But ultimately challenging examples, or, you know, the example of getting ex-drug dealer pit bulls to be adopted, you know, in the ASPCA, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so we get these really tough challenges. But for those people who think they, and in some ways correctly, feel they have an impossible challenge, right? And we run against this all the time in corporate America, and also, you know, with New York, et cetera. You know, oh my God, I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I don't have the people. I don't have the resources. my bosses won't let me. And, you know, you can list out 30 reasons why it's an impossible challenge. And when you accept those, it is impossible. Absolutely. So yeah. The technique that you want to use is questioning assumptions. So just go down and list 20 assumptions about the challenge. And then you go back and you do this with your team. It's more fun if you do it with your team. And then you question those assumptions. You know, we don't have the resources. Okay. Yes, we don't have the resources. Well, maybe we could get interns to do the work, or maybe we could get, you know, JP Morgan to donate the money to the work, or whatever it is. And that's a very powerful thing for somebody who feels that they're trapped in an impossible situation and that they just can't get out of.
Well, I've already thought of several of those for some of the clients that I work with. My brain is as always, Brian, and you always do this. My brain is spinning and thinking, oh gosh, I hope I can go and remember to do that on a regular basis, because it isn't impossible. And you're definitely, and it's so fun at the same time. I know it sounds crazy to say that, but it's fun at the same time. These conversations are always so, I always go back and I'm like, okay, I've got like 12 ideas that came into my head just having a 5-minute conversation with Brian.
Thank you. But you brought out a critical point. This stuff can be a lot of fun. And so why not? Right. And just the one other technique. Well, by the way, my business partner, when he was doing Mented and toothpaste, you know, they questioned the assumption that toothpaste had to come in tubes. And that's why they created, you know, the new thing.
The little, yeah.
But that's a good example of questioning an assumption. But the other technique that people can use that's even easier than questioning assumptions, because sometimes questioning assumptions is hard. It's a mental, oh my God, what are the assumptions? I can't think of it. You can just do the technique 20 questions. How could we, where could we, you know, do who, what, where, when, how, when, whys. And then you could have 20 different questions around this challenge. Who else could do it? How else could they do it? Where else could they do it? Why could they do it? Et cetera, et cetera. So that's an even easier technique that people can use when they're in impossible situations. It's called 20 questions.
You know, and it does. It puts them into the sage side of the brain. I don't know if you've ever studied Shirzad Charmin's positive intelligence, but it puts you in the expansive, enlightened versus closed side, saboteur side of the brain, because then you fundamentally start thinking in a light of curiosity, and you can tell the difference in the word usage, right? Even saying the word curious versus no, those are totally two different things, right? I mean, yeah, and yeah. Everybody knows I'm a closet sci-fi geek and all of those kinds of things. I'm actually open, so I guess I'm not a closet sci-fi geek. But, and I did a presentation. I called it So Long Palm. And it was about all of the technologies that were in play from Star Trek. And this was a while ago, right? Oh, cool. And I was up against an organization that thought, that their organization wouldn't be, that the globe would not be in a position to accept what we were talking about for 20 years. And I said, oh, it'll be next year. And we went through that whole process of, you know, So Long Palm. And if you know the story of Franklin Covey and Palm Pilots and Blackberries versus Apple and all of those things, then back in the day of Captain Kirk, and not the new series, but back in the actual Star Trek when it was first released, which many don't know, it was a very short season when it was first released. But all of the things that they were showing up that people were dreaming, and I don't know, maybe you're also more of a, I was trying to think of a Oh my gosh, who wrote Foundation? My brain is blank.
Isaac Asimov or
Isaac? Yeah, if you're
Heinlein or whatever, one of those guys.
Yeah. If you're any of that kind of thing, then you're dreaming it anyway. But if you can dream it, it could be that reality. So when you're going through some of this, you actually have it unfold to people that there is a reality that is not always what they're thinking in perception. Like their perception can be quite narrow and yours can broaden and make it expansive when you take them through those exercises.
Yeah. So, I mean, one that you're kind of alluding to is the wish technique. And it turns out most adults have trouble wishing, you know. Oh, I wish I could double the sales. Okay, no. We want to push it even further. You know, come on, let's go. And what the prompt that you want to use, and this will really help, is, okay, I want you to violate a law of nature when you do the wish. And then all of a sudden you're in the Star Trek.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm just that geeky for sure on always living in that kind of, oh wow, you could do that, and people will come back and literally go, we can't do that, and I'm like, the numbers don't lie.
and by the way, I should finish this. I don't want to leave people just at the wish. So then, after you do the wishes, then you say, okay, as crazy as this idea sounds, is there any way we can make it a reality? Because if you're violating law of nature, by definition, it's impossible, right? But then you say, okay, well, how can we approximate that? Yeah, we can't beam somebody through the air yet, but we could, you know, have a video council or, you know, center there. So whatever, right? So
They've been working on a beaming. Yeah. That's what I said. I got a list of ones that are actually being food replicators, all sorts of. Yeah. It is hysterical, but that I digress and I don't want to get away from the topic, but anyways, Brian, how did you get to be an ideator? What did you do when you were a kid? What were you doing that got you to this point?
Well, part of it was, and I think this is important, and I think your audience will probably identify with this. You know, I grew up in it was an entrepreneurial household, but I grew up in a household where ideas were championed, right, and loved and appreciated. My dad was an original madman, you know, with all the, you know, the negative things that go with that, you know, four packs of cigarettes a day and drinking and all the rest. But he was a brilliant marketing guy, and so growing up in that environment, you know, I'd be 5 years old, would be watching TV, and he'd say, you know, that was a good ad because, or that was a terrible ad because. And so that was my mentorship. And so I grew up, you know, saying, well, how do you get ideas? I mean, he's coming up with all kinds of ideas. I'm sitting here as a 5 year old. I can't think of anything. So, you know, this may be overly Freudian for your audience, but you know, I really wanted to understand how people get ideas, how to help myself get ideas. And ultimately, you know, the greatest contribution is then how you help other people get ideas. And so that's how it started. By the way, I'll tell you one quick story about one of his ideas. He was working for Kenyon and Eckhart, one of the agencies in New York. They had the Pepsi account. And so he'd come up with contests back then in the 50s and 60s, you know, contests. The agencies came up with new products. They came up with contests, all kinds of stuff. So he had a contest where people would call up a radio station and he had to come up with a tagline. The notion is people would call up, they'd be recorded saying this tagline. Then the radio station would play that back over the airway. And if you recognized your voice as you said it, you'd call up and get a prize, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So what a cool idea, right? So he woke up in the middle of the night. He had a dream about it. And the tagline he came up with, you want to take a guess? It's a famous tagline now in the history of Pepsi, but, you know, I'm putting you on the spot.
You're putting me on the spot. Dang it. I don't have enough time to think. You'll have to just tell me.
So the tagline was actually, "Say Pepsi, please," right? And it was such a brilliant tagline because it was, you know, against "Give me a Coke," right? And so people would call up and they say Pepsi, please. And if you go to, you know, Cracker Barrel, you'll see the "Say Pepsi, please" sign. I've taken pictures of it and all the rest. But that was an incredibly successful contest because people didn't turned out didn't even recognize their own voices on the radio.
So, yeah, because you do sound different, especially back then. You would have sounded like the first time you hear your voice. I don't know if you knew this, but, and I talk about it once in a while, but I sang opera for 18 years. And I remember when I was a kid, well, when they say kid, I was in high school. When I was in high school, I was, you know, it actually, no, it was my freshman year in college. I came back. I didn't take a voice lesson until college, believe it or not. And I was running in. One of my coaches said, okay, you're not hearing yourself. I need you to sing. And this is back, it ages me. It's back in the tape days, right?
You got the reel to reel TX.
Yeah. No. Anyways, and so she literally said, so we're going to record you so you can hear yourself. And I remember bursting out crying when I heard myself. And it took my dad, actually, and he said, no, that is not, that's just a cheap sound device. All she's showing you is where you're breathing and stuff like that. You do not sound like that. And so I could see how in the 50s, if they just were, you know, and they wouldn't recognize it because you don't, I mean, your ears are on the side of your head. They're not forward. You know, I mean, it's one of those things.
So anyway, so it was a lot of fun growing up in that environment, I got to say, to champion ideas. And then he went on to form SAMI, which became the second largest research firm as an entrepreneur. At Time Incorporated, it was a market competitive Nielsen, and the Eureka moment came when he was looking at this. He was a consultant at Time Incorporated. He was looking at the subscription computers turning with wheels, right, in Chicago, and I said, "Oh my gosh, there's extra time here that I can use to take, you know, product movement data from all the retailers." Put that together and then sell reports to the manufacturers about their product movement. But that was a eureka moment, right? That was a eureka moment. So
that's pretty cool. Well, Brian, it has been fabulous talking to you. I know that the listeners
we
are really.
We could
really
go on
great.
For another 3 years.
We could, because I have the gift of the gab.
We just started with some techniques, but
No, it's amazing. I'm going to have to re-listen to it. You've thrown out some zingers. We'll cite it obviously on when we post the podcast, but tell us one place that the listeners or viewers could get a hold of you about this stuff. What would be, we'll list a bunch. Just tell us one.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, if they go onto my website, growth-engine.com, or, you know, they could email me at bmattimore@growth-engine.com. And if they just search my name, Brian Mattimore, B-R-Y-A-N, and Mattimore, M-A-T-T-I-M-O-R-E, there are hundreds of articles out there for different techniques, different approaches, you know, Fast Company, Forbes articles, et cetera. And I would encourage people to search for the billboard technique, which is a concept development technique, and also the whiteboard technique, which I just posted. But that technique is about reinventing suggestion boxes. And so for the smaller companies, I think it's a very powerful thing. So, you know, just if you do the searching, you know, all this stuff will come up. And, you know, I think it'll, the one piece of advice I would have for your audience is, you know, even if you do this stuff poorly, it's better than saying, you know, got some ideas, got some more ideas. You know, it's better than that. So even if you do a lousy job of facilitating the worst idea technique or questioning assumptions or problem redefinition or picture prompts or the TRIZ methodology, it doesn't matter. It's better than saying, got any ideas, got any more ideas.
So he parts with, even if you do it lousy, it's better than nothing.
Yes.
No, you will not do it loud. You will not do it lousy. Trust me. They employing some of these techniques. I'll leave a parting word. It is magical. It is magical, and many of you are going in and working through your budgets and your plan for next year and adding some of these ideas just in even a 5-10 minute session can make all the difference in the world. So,
and Valerie, let me just say one final thing. You know, with AI now, we are using that to trigger our sessions. And so for instance, and now we have a workshop on teaching and training people on how to combine AI with these, you know, techniques. And I'll just, if I can find it here, I just want to give you very quickly one example. We were working on a new snack food ideation. And so I prompted AI and I said, I would like you to create 5 new plant-based, healthier, handheld, baked, on-the-go breakfast snacks for kids to compete with Pop-Tarts inspired by French cuisine. So there were 10 different, you know, elements to that prompt, and AI came up with fantastic answers. So yeah. It's called prompt stacking. But anyway, the point here is if you mash up these techniques with AI, you're going to go even, it'll be exponentially even greater, the ideas you get.
Yeah. You don't have to make it rocket science. Although I do feel like sometimes it does take talent to bring people together in that group or, you know, that group and get them their barriers down so they can get in a mindset of ideating. But yeah, it doesn't take rocket science. So anyways, this has been great. I am so grateful, Brian, for you being on the show, and to all the listeners and viewers, they're going to be thoroughly entertained. I hope break. I always say,
I'm assuming you're going to sing on the next show, right?
You know, I've gotten a lot older. Maybe I should do a teaser with me singing when I was younger, you know, bang out a little bit of Un bel di Remo from Puccini, or maybe from I played the narrator on Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, or Christina, Phantom of the Opera, some of those kinds of fun little bit part, you know, sort of bit parts kind of thing.
As an intro to the session, that's your Tonight Show music as you're coming in, right? You should play that. Anyway. Yeah.
Instead, I do Rachmaninoff's "Fly to the Bumblebee," right. Getting him through the maze. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Valerie.
This has been fantastic, and thank you to all the listeners and viewers. It has been great. Love us, like us, comment. Let Brian know. Just what an amazing thought process this is. And again, thank you again.
Thanks, Valerie. Thank you.
Thank you all for joining another great episode. Hats off to all you small businesses out there. I can't wait for the next episode. And we cut. All right.
Cool.
Usually I switch to the end and then cut, but the guys need to know when we cut and when we don't cut.
Yes.
So how did you have fun? Hopefully you had fun.
I did have fun. You said it'd be fun. You said it'd be fast. You said it'd be great. And it was all the above. So thank you, Valerie. It was really cool.
It was fun. And just so you know, I took your idea and I created like a gazillion use cases, and I'm pressure testing some for working through the model, and then created them for one of my customers as well. And they have been working so well, so well. Yeah. Fun.
I've forgotten. What are we talking about?
I know. You probably talked to 5 gazillion people, and I am not a Fortune 500. So it was when we were talking and I had sent you out an email about the 3 referrals, you said, you know, you could pressure test what sits right with each role by writing, you know, use cases specific to the role, the title, ask them for feedback. And I am going to definitely take your suggestion. I have a proposal I've got to get done, and I'm going to go re-listen. I can't remember which research company you talked about, but I think I'm going to get about 200 of their clients. I need an in for food services, for fast food, for these guys, because it's manufacturing. And I was thinking to myself, I bet you I could go, and because I use surveying all the time, the time. And I could get a few of those things to then put in the presentation that would maybe wow them. We don't know.
It might have been 1Q. I'm not sure.
1Q.
Yeah, 1Q. Yeah. So, well, good. I remember now. I just wasn't quite sure what we were talking about. So, all right, Valerie. Well, thank you again. And, when this is ready, I'll obviously post it to my 19,000 LinkedIn contacts. I'm assuming 100 of whom might actually watch it. So, or 20.
It would be really, really nice if they actually did. Revenue North Star is a startup, and we're just trying to get our name out there. And, it's a process when you're starting from scratch, and when people think you're consultants and not just, you know, and the consultant space is so saturated, and we're not, any employee consults, but we are execution of the strategy as well as creation of the strategy.
Yeah. And you guys are true sort of growth partners, right? I mean, you guys are really, you know, you guys have skin in the game. So you are partners. You're not consultants, you know? And I know when clients started to treat us like suppliers, like we're like, this is not working for us. We're your partners. We're not your suppliers. We were, but you know what I mean, right? So anyway.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I actually am dealing with a high involvement planning session that I almost think that if I got you involved in it down the road a little bit, if I could talk them into it, I think that it would help on a number of fronts for sure. But anyway, you're always at the back of my mind every time. Brian would be doing 21 questions and 21 whatever.
20 questions, but we'll go for 21. That's okay.
21 days
for a big idea and 20 questions, but you know, whatever. Did I send you the quotes book? I probably didn't. Did I send you that? I'll send you an e-version of quotes, which you'll get such a kick out of it. It just came out this week. It's really fun. It's an AI-assisted book, and I'm really proud of what I did. It took a tremendous amount of work, but it's 330 pages, but it's really interesting, I think. And I'll send it to you.
Oh, that would be really, really, that would be fabulous. I'd love it. I'll put it on my, are you going to be the one who reads it on Audible so people?
No, I'll probably hire somebody to do it, you know, when I'm ready to get the Audible version. I'm not going to, you know, they didn't ask me to do Idea Stormers and I was offended, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure I'll hire somebody to do it. So anyway.
All right.
Thanks,
Howard.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.